Hello, it's me, Lily, a frog. I live in a pond, and I love to tell stories. The plot for this story was generated with a random fairy tale generator. If you visit our Facebook page for Tales from the Lily Pad, you can find a link to it there, or you can Google random fairy tale generator. They're fun to play with if you like writing or telling or drawing or acting out stories. You might like to play with it too. Give it a try. It's fun. Here's the plot the random fairy tale generator gave me. This story is about a brave girl who must break a curse, defeat a giant, and find a magic ring to defeat a tyrant. Things are complicated by a jealous rival. Assistance comes in the form of a magic swan. Now, of course, a plot and a story are different. So here's the story with a few details and such added by Marlene Werfel. Once upon a time, in the most beautiful castle that was ever built in the entire history of humankind and in all the stories ever told, was an unhappy king, queen, and prince. They weren't sad. They were simply unhappy, remarkably not happy, because you'd think it would be easy for them to be happy living in such an exquisitely beautiful castle with all they could ever need or want, including each other. Their castle, called the Sweetwater Castle because it was in the Sweetwater Valley of the Sweetwater Kingdom through which the Sweetwater River ran, was made entirely out of crystal. Citrine crystal, quartz crystal, and amethyst crystals too. In the morning, when the sun rose behind it, the entire castle and all its crystal walls and turrets and spires would glow with the exquisite reds and pinks and purples of the sunrise. And in the midday, when the sun shone above the castle was full of a honeyed light, and it was warm where you'd want it to be warm, but cool just where you'd want it to be cool. And in the evening, the sunset made a spectacular display throughout the kingdom, refracting colorful light everywhere. And at night, when the mists of the valley lay around it and the moon shone strong above it, that castle appeared to be made out of the soft, silvery glow of moonlight itself. And what's more, a river ran through the kingdom and through the castle too. The Sweetwater River, as it ran through and all around the castle, it played melodies on the most finely constructed instrument that was ever made. The instrument was wrought from thousands of fine crystals suspended from the tallest turrets with silver and gold threads, so that the most beautiful music could be heard at all times throughout the kingdom for all to enjoy. All that is, except for the king and queen and prince. For a curse had been placed upon them. The castle was, of course, constructed by giants, like all things that are the most finely wrought things in the entire history of humans and in all their stories. The king commissioned the giants to build the castle for his queen and the new baby that she was expecting, who is now a grown prince, but the king did not expect the giants to be so speedy in their construction, and this was his first mistake. For giants work as quickly as they do finally. The king's second mistake was not having enough money ready to pay for the castle when it was done, and his third mistake, the most dire mistake of all, was to, instead of being honest with the giants about not being able to pay in full, blamed them instead of admitting his own fault. The king publicly decreed that he would only pay for half the agreed-upon rate for the castle because, he declared, the castle was poorly made and only half as fine as he had expected it to be. Well, the giants could not have been more offended. After devoting an entire year of their craftsmanship, workmanship, and artistry to what anybody could plainly see was a masterwork, the giants responded by refusing to take any payment from the king. If he was indeed unsatisfied. But the giants cursed the castle and all who inhabited it that they should never be able to see beauty, hear music, nor taste sweetness as long as they lived there. Of course, a giant's curse is as well made as anything else by a giant, and the curse was placed inside a black pearl in a magic ring that was tossed over a cliff that was riddled with ogres, where it sank down, down to the inky depths of a deep, deep enchanted lake, which was guarded by a great green dragon. Now, it's not that the cliff, nor the ogres, nor the dragon, nor the inky depths of the enchanted lake would have been such an insurmountable challenge for the king and the queen's mighty armies, or their legions of knights and covens of sorceresses, but without the ability to see beauty, or hear music, or taste sweetness, they didn't have an inkling, really, of why it should matter one way or another. They simply didn't care. The queen had planned to have scores of babies, but as she held her firstborn in her arms, without the ability to see his beauty, or hear the music of his laughter, or taste the sweetness of his infancy, she couldn't see the point of having more children. So for decades, the kingdom devoted itself to nothing more than the rearing of a joyless prince, and the pleasureless accruement of money, and the accounting of that money, and the most expedient export of all the most delicious and beautiful produce in the kingdom so that more money could be made. In the Sweetwater Kingdom lived an apple grower named Rosie. She was a brave girl who had grown up in the orchard that had been in her family for time immemorial. She would climb and tend apple trees there. She'd keep her fruit safe from the black bears of the Sweetwater Valley. And she'd fish and hunt for her family. In her orchard, the most delicious apples that have ever been grown in the entire history of humankind, and in all their stories too, grew. The apples were such that travelers to the valley who tasted them for the first time would fall to their knees because of the sweetness of the flesh of those sweet water-grown apples. And they would pay great sums of money, and they'd go to great troubles to bring home just a few apples for their beloveds. But when Rosie brought cartloads of apples to the Sweetwater Castle for the king and queen and prince, they would bite into them without pleasure. They wanted none for themselves, only for export. They would only thank her for adding to the vast stores of the kingdom with a curt nod or a grim smile. She never saw anything like pride or humor or mirth in their transactions. Well, this made Rosie curious, and she asked the elders of the valley why the king and queen and prince were so joyless in their exquisitely beautiful castle. The elders told her about the curse of the giants upon all inhabitants of the Sweetwater Castle. It had been in place for decades now. Well, when a brave girl like Rosie hears about a curse locked within a black pearl in a magic ring at the depths of an enchanted lake guarded by a great green dragon at the bottom of ogre-riddled cliffs, it becomes difficult for her to think or talk about anything else. But she was not only a brave girl, but a smart girl and a dutiful girl too. So she put her desire for adventure aside to focus on care for her orchard and her aging parents and grandparents. The enterprise of breaking the curse was exciting, but it seemed all risk and no reward. Who would tend to the apple trees? Who would ward off the black bears? Who would hunt wild boars for village feasts, if not her? Until the queen and king retired from their royal duties, and they passed their reign over the kingdom joylessly down to their joyless son. He was crowned King Flint, and he became quickly infamous for mercilessly taking more than his fair share, so that the kingdom, which was once known for good health and vigor and strength, became poor. Old people turned gaunt, and babies did not grow fat. School children stopped having enough money for shoes and books, and there was positively no money for feasting and dancing and celebrating. King Flint, in fact, forbade birthday parties and wedding parties and any gathering that wasn't expressly for the purpose of accumulating more money within the kingdom. Well, not being able to taste sweetness, nor see beauty, nor hear music, he simply did not see any value in celebrations. Though he did know he would need to marry if his lineage was to continue ruling the Sweetwater Kingdom for all time, so he asked his most powerful sorceress to choose a bride for him from the Sweetwater Kingdom. Imagine Rosie's horror when King Flint sent a carriage for Rosie's younger sister, Posy, so that she'd be brought to the castle to begin preparations for a marriage with no celebration. Oh, poor Posy. She was such an apple-cheeked beauty. She was known for telling jokes and playing wonderful music on her fiddle, which some said sang so sweetly it must be enchanted. Well, Posy tended to the grapes in the vineyard, and without her, there was likely to be little, if any, good wine in the years to come. And worse, she was Rosie's best friend, and the thought of living without Posy was unbearable to Rosie. But even more unbearable was the thought of Posy living in that joyless castle, where the color would surely fade from her cheeks, and the laughter would surely die in her belly, and the sweetness of life would disappear with a sparkle in her eyes. It was inconceivable. It was untenable. It was abhorrent. Well, sure enough, less than a month passed, and Rosie's sister Posy became Queen Flint. And although a gleaming crown that suggested limitless wealth sat upon her head, already she was joyless and unrecognizable from the young woman that was so happy in her vineyards and with her fiddle and with her family. Rosie set out at once to break the curse of the giants. She strapped her bow and quiver to her back. She put a sword in her scabbard and she tied a sturdy rope to a tree at the top of the ogre-riddled cliffs. The descent was easy, hand over hand. Rosie had been climbing ropes and trees all her life, and it was easy, too, to distract the ogres with rancid boar meat, a plan that Rosie had put into place the moment she first heard of the giant's curse. Well, ogres love nothing more than a somewhat green ham, and so Rosie strategically chucked hunks of rancid ham in hard-to-reach places along the cliff face so that the ogres would ignore her bland scent, which they did. The dragon guarding the enchanted lake at the bottom of the cliffs was a bit more of a problem. Rosie knew about dragons because she had paid attention at school, so she knew that the dragon would have poor eyesight, like all dragons do, but would likely turn its fiery breath on any bit of motion it could detect, like all dragons do. So before getting too close, Rosie observed. She watched the dragon while she clung to the cliffs just beyond the dragon's line of sight. And sure enough, any tiny leaf blowing across the shore, or any delicate little bit of fluff that floated down to the enchanted lake, the dragon would scorch into oblivion. It was not possible for Rosie to set foot on the shore of the enchanted lake without being incinerated. Rosie tossed an apple from her pocket into the enchanted lake to see what would happen. The dragon fire-scorched the apple to a blackened crisp even before it dropped into the lake, and again when its blackened core bobbed up to the surface. But Rosie also observed that whenever a particular melody played from within the Sweetwater Castle, filling the castle and the valley below with music, the dragon would fall fast asleep for a good 15 minutes. She observed this thrice. The song sounded like this. So Rosie waited, and when the song sounded and the dragon fell asleep, she dove down, down into the deep, inky depths of the enchanted lake to search for the magic ring. But the lake was enchanted, and it was unlike all other lakes. It was not possible for Rosie, even though she was an excellent diver, to find her way to the bottom. The lake just went on and on and on and on and on so that no mortal could ever reach the bottom, and the water was so impossibly dark that she couldn't possibly see anything through it. Also, the water of the enchanted lake had an inexplicably dizzying quality, whereby when Rosie thought she was diving down, she was actually swimming up. She kept finding herself breaking the surface of the water as the dragon's nap was coming quickly to an end. Just when Rosie was sure the dragon would wake up, fire scorch her, and end all her hopes, assistance came in the form of a magic swan. It was a black swan who wore a golden collar with an emerald gleaming in it. The swan dove down, 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 and then resurfaced with the black pearl ring in her bill. She dropped the ring into Rosie's outstretched hand and then lifted Rosie up by her belt. The beautiful black swan lifted Rosie out of the enchanted lake, away from the awakening dragon, into the air, and high above the treacherous ogre-filled cliffs to the edge of the moat that surrounded the Sweetwater Castle. The swan set Rosie down and bowed gracefully to her. And Rosie remembered where she had seen the beautiful swan with the remarkable emerald collar before, swimming outside the Sweetwater Castle as Rosie was pushing her apple cart over the drawbridge to the king. Rosie had thought the swan looked hungry and thin, and so she offered her an apple, which she had eaten gratefully, and then another, and another, and another, until the swan wasn't hungry anymore. Rosie raced into the Crystal Castle to find her sister, to tell her the happy news that they could break the curse of the giants at last. But in her excitement, she'd forgotten that her sister wasn't the girl she'd remembered. She was Queen Flint now. Well, she didn't find a trace of her sister's warmth in the queen that sat in the throne before her. In fact, the queen looked baffled as to why she'd want to break the curse at all. "Give me the ring," she said, and she threw it atop a pile of other jewels on a little table beside her. "Bring me that girl," she said to some henchmen, pointing to her own sister. Well, the henchmen wore armor and held huge spears and axes, and Rosie was so afraid. "You always thought your apples were better than my grapes, didn't you?" asked Queen Flint. "Of course not. Never," answered Rosie. "You always thought you were more beautiful than me, didn't you?" asked Queen Flint. "Never," answered Rosie. "You want to break this curse because you want the king to see your beauty is superior to mine so that you can steal my king and my crown, don't you?" asked Queen Flint. "Of course not," cried Rosie. She didn't understand how her beloved sister could have become so jealous. "Into the dungeon with her," commanded Queen Flint, "and leave her there." Oh, poor Rosie. Already she could feel the curse working upon her. Those crystal castle walls, which before had appeared exquisitely beautiful, began to look drab and unremarkable. The beautiful music which filled the crystal castle began to sound like just any old noise, and the delicate fresh scent of the Sweetwater River began to fade. All hope would have been lost, except Queen Flint kept her eye trained on that black pearl ring, and she thought, and she thought, and she thought that if she broke the curse, she might gain more power. It had occurred to her that her husband, King Flint, didn't seem to notice her beauty at all, but it had been a thing which she dimly remembered most people appreciated in her life before. She seemed to recall that she liked being thought beautiful, and she dimly remembered being able to make music and there being a sort of power in that, and she dimly remembered there being something lovely about fruit in general, and wine in particular, and that too had worked to her advantage in some way. "If I break the curse, I'll only be more powerful when my king sees my beauty with open eyes, and can hear the beauty of my music and taste the sweetness of my wine," thought the queen. And so she told her henchmen to smash the black pearl, and to release its dust into the Sweetwater River to be carried away forever. And they did, and the curse was broken. And it was like a veil fell away from the queen's eyes, and she saw how beautiful the castle she was inside was. And it was like cotton fell out of her ears, and she heard how beautiful the music that surrounded her was, and she rushed to the Sweetwater River to taste it, kneeling beside it. And after not tasting sweetness for such a long time, she was so grateful for how delicious it was. And she called for her sister at once. And together they watched the king discover sweetness and music and beauty and joy. And when these things became important again, the whole kingdom prospered. and children had enough money for shoes and books and candies too. And the old people got color back in their cheeks, and they told stories to fat grandbabies on their laps. And the trees and the vines were thick with fruit, and the sunsets and sunrises filled the castle with resplendence. And the king made sure 3 times as much gold as the giants had originally asked for constructing the castle was sent to them as payment for the Sweetwater Castle after all these years. And they had a big celebration to christen the castle. And there were weddings and feasts and celebrations. And the crystal castle was full of the queen's music and her laughter, and the music and laughter and sweetness of her children too, and of her children's children for generations and generations more. The end.